Good morning. I think we should start because we have a very full agenda today. It is my great pleasure to welcome you here at the 37th World Conference on Lung Health. This event is becoming a really important networking possibility for many people, as we have been able to learn from a recent evaluation that the union has undergone. It is an opportunity to really catch up on different things, to discuss ways forward, and I think even with modern technologies, we cannot replace the fact that meeting face-to-face, it's much easier, and it takes us much quicker to the results. I think it's important that we very forcefully make sure that the new Stop TB strategy is being implemented. As you can hear in the media and in emails, we have a crisis that may hamper the implementation of the Stop TB strategy, and you will hear certainly more from Mario and others during this meeting. We will have a press conference today that will emphasize the fact that we need additional funds to really make sure that we can tackle this XDR problem in a way that will avoid that it spreads further. Without going further into detail, I would like to pass now the floor to Mario Raviglione for a few remarks.
So many thanks, Nils, and welcome also on my behalf to all the people present here. I cannot see very much because I have the lights in my face, but just to add a couple of remarks that this has been quite, since last year, it has been quite a year with an enormous series of things that have happened. You will hear today the latest data Chris Dye will present in a few minutes, and they are quite important data regarding the progress towards the achievements of the global targets. And some of you that were present yesterday already heard a little bit of a preliminary report, but today you will hear a more complete one, and I think that is something to be meditated upon, because these are the famous 2005 targets now that we are reporting on. Next year we will have to go to the World Health Assembly, the ministers of health of the whole, you know, the entire world, to report back on the achievements, and therefore this is the preliminary presentation, and so place your attention to that, because it's going to dominate in a way the messaging around for the next few months. In addition, during the past 1 year, we have seen the launch of the global plan to stop TB in January of this year. That has been a remarkable success, with many high-level people, if you like, VIP and so on, that have taken it on board, and they have committed even in some cases a huge amount of money to support it. Nils already mentioned the Stop TB, the new Stop TB strategy that starts with DOTS and will continue to start with DOTS, but that has also the other component of modern TB control that are necessary in 2006 to fight the epidemic and to get us to the Millennium Development Goals by 2015. Another important step that I wanted to remember is that of the International Standards of Care and the Associated Patient Charter. These are, again, innovative documents that are going to allow the private sector, sensu lato, and if you like, the communities, to have their tools to help and contribute as it is part of the new Stop TB strategy. And finally, I just wanted to make a remark about the political level of TB. I think a year or two ago we were discussing that TB is not political enough. We have to make it a political issue. Without making it a political issue, we can go on and on and on for many years among technical people to discuss the details, but we may not be heard by those that eventually make decisions and eventually put resources. This year I had the luck to meet the Secretary General of the United Nations, Kofi Annan, in March, and discussing with him the possibility of having high-level representation for the TB community. And as you probably know, and you will probably see in the next day or two, the Secretary General eventually appointed the President of Portugal, that just the exiting president of Portugal after 10 years, Jorge Sampaio, to become a spokesperson, if you like, a special envoy, in fact, is the original and definitive title of Kofi Annan on the TB story, and he is now working very closely with some of us in the Stop TB partnership, in WHO, etc., to do what he can do to mobilize the high-level people around the world against tuberculosis. We have seen also the DG8 have, for the second year in a row, put TB down in their agenda. Whether that becomes concrete or not is another story. I've not seen much concrete, frankly, steps taken out of the G8 agenda of 2005 when TB was mentioned. There should have been a major mobilization of resources that, in my view, has not really, in a way, happened, except that for the global plan in 2006, we have seen Bill Gates and a few others committing more money. Similarly, this year, in 2006, the G8 again have remarked on the importance of TB, and so that opens the way for us when we go and talk to the G8 countries and their cooperation agencies about the need to mobilize what is necessary. UNGAS is the other, the UN General Assembly that has discussed AIDS in June of this year, also has inserted, thanks particularly to the work of a few community representatives, has taken the TB-HIV issue seriously and has put it down in the resolution. And finally, now, as Nils already mentioned, we are facing the issue of XDR-TB that is prompting us to what inadequate TB control can generate. And this is a big challenge. I think we will hear much more. I think Ken Castor will be giving a talk about that this morning. We'll hear more in detail about what is happening in Southern Africa particularly, but also around the world where XDR-TB has emerged. And we know that this is just a manifestation of failing in good practices of TB control. And so here we have, in a way, a huge challenge, but also an excellent opportunity to further raise the issue of TB control, to further raise the issue of what needs to be done to face this modern threat that in this particular case combine, I think, the two most difficult problems that we are facing today, TB-HIV and resistance to drugs, and even now to second-line drugs, so leaving us really in a situation of the pre-antibiotic era, in a way. So with that, I conclude by wishing everyone an excellent day of review of the story of where we stand in TB control. And I hope that this conference, also the rest of the week, with all the conferences, the union and the special events that are there, will allow us really to catch up and be on the same line to fight this disease. Thank you.
Thank you, Mario. I think it's critical that we acknowledge the commitment from the community, and I think they have been a great driving force to get us going, and I think it's important that we get that commitment and also the impetus from that group, and we would like to welcome Javid Zayed to say a few words on behalf of the community. Please, Javid.
Thanks, Nils, and thanks, Mario, as well for your opening remarks, because it covered a lot of issues that I was interested in addressing as well. I think what Mario was mentioning are some of the key issues that we're really invested in from a community perspective. My name is Javed Sayed. I work at the Treatment Action Group in New York, and I work on TB-HIV, and our main goal is to look at how we can learn certain lessons from the HIV world and apply it to the TB world, because a lot of us who are living with both the diseases are sort of at the forefront of where some of these major issues around TB control also emerge, around diagnostics, around the need for new tools overall, as well as the issue that Mario had mentioned about just increasing the political will behind TB. And so how we do it is to actually work with treatment activists who are doing HIV work and getting them to get more informed and educated about HIV-TB. And then through that treatment activism, the next step after getting educated about treatment issues is, of course, getting involved in treatment advocacy, and that's where a lot of what we've seen in, you know, our experience and with colleagues in Southern Africa as well as in other parts of the world, it necessarily means demanding that the healthcare system then gets responsive to communities' needs, and part of that, of course, means the need for new tools as well as the need for increased resources. So one of our main messages for our advocacy around the TB world is that the TB world is really humble in what we ask for, and it quite often never asks for what it even needs. And part of our message is that we should really be more ambitious about what we need, not only because it's for us and our work, but it's also because of the lives that are really being impacted by it. And part of that work has been documenting what TB World actually spent on new tools for 2005. And it's really a shame. For 2005, we found that the world spent around $400,000. And that it's just, $400 million. It's just kind of amazing to think that that was the global spending on TB new R&D for 2005, and we identified the need to be at least five times that amount. And so one of our main messages to really ask for what we need, and that will at least put us in the place to hold our governments accountable for what they haven't done then, as opposed to shooting ourselves in the foot by not even being clear about what we need. The second part that I wanted to talk about was the need for, one of the elements of the Stop TB strategy now, which is around community empowerment. And what that looks like for us is a real partnership between researchers, policymakers, and community activists, because not one of us can make these changes that need to happen in order for TB control to be more responsive and really meet our needs. And in the area of what we continue to call the human resource crisis in many parts of the world, the TB community and the TB HIV community can play a significant role in addressing some of the critical issues around early case detection, around detection of adverse events, and addressing them in a way that allows people to at least continue their treatment or address it in a way that prevents them from creating these XDR scenarios that currently exist and are emerging. So I think the partnership between healthcare systems and the communities that are infected and affected is certainly a critical piece that we are sort of bringing to the table and encouraging us as TB, as people who are invested in TB control, to think about much more critically and together so that we can come up with more innovative solutions than what we have currently for TB control. With those remarks, I wanted to put in a plug for a meeting that was going to happen tomorrow. We'd invited all of the NTP managers from the 22 high burden countries to have a dialogue with HIV-TB activists basically tomorrow, and we haven't heard back from all of them. We've heard from about seven of them. So if you are interested in that conversation, please come and see me over the break, and the meeting is tomorrow throughout the day, and we're doing that meeting in partnership with the Stop TB Partnership. So it will be great to see all of the national TB program managers there tomorrow. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Javid, and without further delay, I hand over to the chair of this session, Jaap Brockmans.
After these warm words of welcome, I think it is appropriate to remember that in May we had the news of the sudden death of J.W. Lee, and I think we are all here together because of his work. He brought, first of all, the TB people within WHO together. He led WHO into the partnership. He facilitated the growth of the Global Drug Facility, and he has been a real leader in the infectious disease domain in the world. His passing away is sad, and I hope we can continue his legacy in the spirit, with his humor, with his leadership, with his presence always when you needed him. Thank you. And I'd like now to call on the first speaker, Chris Dye, who will enlighten us where we are on the way to global control.
Thanks, Jaap. Good morning, everybody. This year, 2006, stands at a watershed in tuberculosis control. Because with the information that we've got at the moment, we can now look back over the last 11 years of DOT's implementation and address that question, well, did we meet the 2005 targets for tuberculosis control? But 2006 is also the first year of implementation of the global plan. And we're in a position, a strong position, through our financial monitoring project to consider how effectively we've launched the global plan and whether that's going to put us on course to meet the Millennium Development Goals by 2015. So my two questions are, did we reach the 2005 targets for case detection and treatment success? And will we achieve the Millennium Development Goals? And the answers to those questions are no, but, and yes, if. And I'm going to spend the next 20 minutes explaining those answers to those questions. First, a refresher on the targets. It was the 1991 World Health Assembly in this language that set the targets for 70% case detection and 85% treatment success, and those targets were to be met by year 2000. Of course, they weren't met by year 2000, and the targets were deferred. And while the process of deferral was going on, Kofi Annan, Secretary General of the UN, launched the Millennium Development Goals. So as this process was happening, our targets for implementation became incorporated within the Millennium Development Goals. The process had to be technically reinforced by WHO and then endorsed by the STOP-TB partnership, and that's the sensation I'm trying to create with this slide. And the end result of that product was the set of targets that many of you will be familiar with. Our targets for implementation, 70% case detection, 85% treatment success, are sitting here in the middle of the slide. And we should, as you all know, have reached those by 2005. The overarching goal is to have halted and begun to reverse incidence, by which we mean we want to see the incidence rate of TB going down by 2015. At the bottom of this slide, there are two other important indicators and targets, and that is prevalence and deaths. And the targets are to halve the prevalence and death rates by 2015, as compared with the levels we thought they were at in 1990. Now, there's one other target at the bottom of this slide, which relates to tuberculosis elimination by the middle of this century, but I'm not going to say any more about that in this presentation. So I want to consider how well we've done with respect to these targets and how we're progressing towards the MDGs, but first a little bit about the epidemiological backdrop. We've been saying for the last 4 or 5 years or so that tuberculosis incidence in the world as a whole has been slowly creeping upwards at a decelerating rate, but it's still been going upwards. Now, I think, for just about the first time, we can ask ourselves whether that process has come to an end. It looks like the rise that we saw throughout the 1990s in Eastern Europe, represented by the green line on this slide, came to a halt at around about 2000. Not everywhere, not in every country, but in the region as a whole. And similarly, for the first time now, there are quite strong signs that in countries of Eastern and Southern Africa, tuberculosis has stopped increasing and is probably starting to go down. Now, we're going to have to ask whether that's really true if it's really true, how much of it can be attributed to our control efforts versus other epidemiological effects. And the strongest effect that we need to look at is the influence of changing HIV infection rates. HIV incidence probably peaked ages ago in Eastern and Southern Africa, and there are signs that HIV prevalence has also peaked and is coming down in some countries. So in the inset in this picture, you see the world on an expanded scale now, with that very slow increase in incidence rate, in our assessment, probably coming to a halt and perhaps beginning to go down. And if that's really true, then we've essentially met the overarching target set by the Millennium Development Goals. But we've always said that would be much easier than reducing prevalence and deaths. And the prevalence and deaths are the bigger targets that we're going to have to focus on. But what about implementation? Did we meet those targets, 70-85? Well, I showed this picture last year at this meeting, and we got up to 53% case detection rate by 2004. Our best estimate at the moment, with data from 175 countries, we want more than 200 countries, but 175 countries, more than 96% of all TB cases in the world, is that we made it to 59%, around about the 60% mark, which falls short of the target. So our best estimate is that we didn't meet the target for case detection, even though over the last 11 years, we treated more than 26 million patients with tuberculosis. Now, a number of objections will be raised to our estimate of 59%, and I'm not going to go into all of them now. But I do just want to acknowledge with this slide that there is uncertainty around our estimates, and I've tried to capture that uncertainty in this slide here. Here you see the 59% by 2005, with a lower limit down to 46%, and a possible upper limit of 82%. The optimists among you will have your eyes focused above that line, but I really think that is a very optimistic interpretation of the data that we have available. And I do think it's much more likely that the 60% is about right. As I said, there's a lot more technical discussion to go with that, and I don't have time for that now. How has that happened by region? Of course, some regions have done better, others have done not so well. Here's the 70% target. The black dots are the global average. You can see that the only region to have met the 70% target is the Western Pacific region, which has put in a massive surge in the last 3 or 4 years, and that's essentially China. You can see that for consistently good performance, the Southeast Asian region probably wins the race, and that's predominantly India, backed by Indonesia and one or two other countries in that region. The back markers are the Eastern Mediterranean and the European region down at the bottom here. How about treatment success? The target's 85%. Once again, the black dots here are the global average, which has always been high, but has been creeping up slowly towards that 85% target and has reached 84% in the 2004 cohort. Across the regions, the Western Pacific region has performed consistently, outstandingly, and conspicuously well. The Southeast Asian region put in a big surge between 2000-2001, and that was mainly due to better compilation of data rather than necessarily better treatment of patients. But those two regions as a whole have now met the targets in our assessment. So two regions and about 60 countries in total have met the treatment success target. That's about the same as the number of countries that met the case detection target. And I'm going to use words like about a lot, because there are a number of countries that apparently sit in our target zone, which is shown here, about which I have still some very serious questions. And there may be some countries that are outside the target zone that should be in it. But this is a combination of the two indicators, the case detection rate under dots at the bottom, the treatment success rate vertically. We want more than 70, greater than 85, so the countries marked in green are those that, according to our data, have met both targets. And there are about 25 of those countries. including the high burden countries, China and Vietnam. Of course, Vietnam has been there for a while, and I'll come to the case of Vietnam in a moment. My suspicions surround a number of countries, but among them marked on here are Myanmar and DR Congo. Now, I said earlier that the trend in incidence may well be downwards. We haven't, globally that is, we haven't advertised greatly the smaller countries in particular that seem to have declining case notifications. But there are quite a lot of countries of that kind, and these may be real declines in incidence. If you look at the Eastern Mediterranean region, for example, there are 10 countries that have low and falling case notification rates. And it's certainly true in some of those countries that that decline is real. It's a real reduction in incidence. And it's also certainly true that that reduction in incidence is attributable to the implementation of control programs. But there are other countries, the higher burden countries, where we're not seeing the expected trends. And we're not seeing them in a way that gives cause for concern, not just in the countries themselves, but on a much wider scale. Now, this picture for Vietnam was drawn by our colleagues at KNCV, with whom we've discussed this a lot. But these data can be drawn in the same way from the information submitted by Vietnam to WHO. The inset on this graph shows you the trend in case notifications, which you can see from even from a distance, I think, has been flat. And yet, as I showed on the previous slide, Vietnam has met the targets, according to our estimation, and it has met them for many years. So why isn't incidence rate going down? Well, the answer is apparently that incidence is going down among middle-aged adults, particularly women, but that's offset by an effect in young adults, particularly young men. And the two of those effects balance each other out. So what you see in these orange bars going downwards here is rates of change in case notification that are negative, in other words, going downwards. And these are offset by the increases that you see in young adults 15 to 24 years old. One question that arises from this, apart from many questions about why this is happening in Vietnam, HIV's got something to do with it, but it's not the whole story, is how general is this phenomenon? So we've looked at data from a number of other countries. Sri Lanka, for example, shows exactly the same pattern. A decline in middle-aged adults, particularly women, an increase in young adults, particularly men. And the net effect of those two things is to cancel each other out and leave no net change in incidence. And these patterns cause considerable concern. Another example, perhaps the most important example of all, India. Despite a huge increase in coverage with DOTS, very high case detection rates, impressively high case detection rates on a very large area, high treatment success rates, there is nowhere in India that shows a very obvious reduction in case notifications that would represent, obviously, a decline in incidence, such as we've seen in some other countries. Peru, we've advertised a lot. That kind of effect is not being seen in India. So here you see three states that are said to have been performing relatively well: Kerala, West Bengal, Rajasthan. And the trends in case notifications, with a bit of wobble here and there, are broadly upwards still, suggesting that what's still going on is improvements in case finding. But there's no evidence in these data for a decline in incidence, and we really want to see that decline in incidence very soon to be convinced that all the effort that's been put into implementation really is reducing transmission and the incidence rate. So the main message I want to pass on from this series of slides is that our expectations on impact for TB control, which come out of our previous understanding of what happened in Europe and North America, may not be met in other parts of the world. We need, therefore, to monitor and evaluate very carefully, and we need to have a good understanding of the underlying epidemiology in these countries, which may be different from anything we've ever seen before. Now, the last section of this presentation, and really what I alluded to at the start of this talk, was that with respect to launching the global plan in 2006, we can begin to consider how effectively we've got it off the launch pad, how well are we doing so far? And I'm going to use our financial monitoring project, which is steered by Catherine Floyd and Andrea Pantoja, who have assembled these data, to consider how well we're doing in this first year. Well, this is just by way of introduction, one introductory slide on the global plan. This is the expression of how that $56 billion, you'll remember, if it were raised, would be spent. We're going to focus, of course, on the implementation part of it, if I can use that term, so not new technology, drugs, diagnostics and vaccines, but DOTS expansion, the management of drug resistance and TB-HIV. And if we raise all that money and spend it in the way that's outlined in detail, then the effect, as we've said before at this meeting, should be as follows. We want to halve prevalence and death rates. The expression of that on this graph is that we want to see the 2015 levels in relation to the 1990 levels falling to less than a value of 0.5. So over on the right-hand side, our calculations in the global plan show that we would just about do that if we raised that money and, as I said, spent it in the way that's laid out in the plan. But if we succeed, that's primarily because of what will happen in Southeast Asia and the Western Pacific region, backed by what will happen in the Americas and the Eastern Mediterranean region, but not because of what is expected to happen in Africa and Eastern Europe. But I don't want to say more about impact here. I want to focus on implementation as expressed in terms of budgets and finances. So in this first of a series of slides I'll show you, what you see for the years 2006 and 2007 is in the first column the expectations set out in the global plan, and this is the global total. In the second column, what the countries themselves are planning and budgeting. And in the third column, what are the available funds? And whether you look at 2006 or 2007, the striking picture is that there's a big difference between global plan expectations and country expectations, a difference to the tune of about $500 million, but not such a big difference between country plans and available funds. What you'll also see from the color coding on this slide is that the principal differences are in the size of the orange bars. And the orange bars represent planning for TB and HIV control, TB control linked to HIV. So that is the biggest deficit and the biggest difference between what appears in the global plan and what appears in the country plans. And that is followed in second place by advocacy and communication, for which a very large budget was set in the global plan. The same pattern, as I've said, is repeated for 2007, but the gap opens up even wider, becomes a little bigger than 500 million. And indeed, we look at this series of bars which charts the total country budgets between 2002, when this project began, through to 2007. We can see that there was a steady increase in country budgets up to 2006, and last year at this meeting, we trumpeted the fact that countries had doubled their budgets between 2002 and 2006 approximately. But what is somewhat disappointing is that this now seems to have flattened out. We don't yet have the data for Russia, and they're always important, but nonetheless, this increase in budgets appears to have slowed down at a time when we would expect it to be increasing, as set out in the global plan. There's a little bit of extra money here for TB and HIV and other activities, but it's not enough money to satisfy the demands of the global plan. Now, we want to know not just whether countries are budgeting in line with the global plan. We want to know whether, having set their budgets, they can raise the necessary money and then spend that money. And that's what's represented in the blue and the orange bars on this slide, for the different regions around the world. So the blue bars are available funds in relation to the budgets that the countries set themselves, and we want that to be 100%. And the orange bars are expenditure of available funds, and we want that to be 100% as well. You can see that across the regions, the performance is by and large quite good. The deficits are in a collection of African countries. in the eastern Mediterranean region, which is principally Pakistan, and in eastern Europe, which is principally Russia. So by and large, countries do quite well, but there are some serious deficiencies in raising money against budgets and in spending that money. Now, I've highlighted that the budget gap, if you like, between the global plan and the country plans is principally due to TB-HIV. Well, one reflection of the problem with respect to TB-HIV is given here in these data, which describe, as best we can describe it at the moment, the rate of scale-up of TB-HIV control programs in the high-burden African countries. So we're running from 2002 through to 2005, and on the four indicators on this slide, you can see the general impression is upwards, and actually sharply upwards in 2005. The four indicators are TB patients tested for HIV, those found to be HIV positive, those on cotrimoxazole, preventive therapy, and those on antiretroviral therapy. So this surge upwards in 2005 is, of course, an excellent sign. But what we also have to bear in mind, and now we go back to the global plan figures, is that while there were 125,000 or so TB patients tested for HIV in 2005, the expectation under the global plan for 2006 is that 600,000 will be tested, which is a huge increase on what we've seen reported anyway for 2005. And with respect to the number of patients on antiretroviral therapy, the 15,000 for 2005 needs to turn into 200,000 in 2006. Those clearly are very major demands to be placed on African countries. And they partly explain why countries perhaps have been reluctant to set these very high budgets for TB-HIV control, because they themselves know how well they're performing. So, in summary, did we reach the 2005 targets? Well, I said the answer was no, but, and there are quite a long list of buts. I'll give you six of them. I think 59 out of 70 and 84 out of 85 would be described as a near miss in the airline industry. We treated over 26 million patients in 11 years. We reached target detection rates in, well, in our count, 57 countries, but that may go up and down a bit, let's say around about 60, and that's the tally also for the number that have reached the target cure rates. The countries that reached both targets, of course, are not the same countries, and that collection of 25 is therefore a subset of the 260s that you see there. Both targets were reached in the Western Pacific region, and the treatment success target was also reached in the Southeast Asian region as a whole, according to our data. And we may now be on the threshold of declining incidence. And if we are, that means that we have met or are on the way to meeting the overarching target under the Millennium Development Goals. That, of course, still leaves the big problem of reducing the prevalence and death rates. So will we achieve the Millennium Development Goals? Well, of course, we've got to be optimistic. Yes, if. And there are a long list of ifs that one could put here, but I'll just offer two of them, which are, I think, immediate needs for action. One is that the global plan, which is admittedly something of a top-down product, needs to be turned into robust, funded, country-owned plans in order to implement the Stop TB strategy. That's about getting the basics of TB control right at country level with the aid of proper planning and budgeting. And, well, of course, I'm bound to say this, but stronger monitoring and evaluation is also needed to guide action. And that was the purpose of me giving you these examples of not declining incidence rates, or at least little evidence for declining incidence rates. It's going to be important not just to go on monitoring and evaluating the operational aspects of what we do, but what is also important is that in the process, we gain a deeper understanding of TB epidemiology, because it may be different in some of these high-burden countries from what we have seen in the past in Europe and North America. And unless we understand that TB epidemiology, I don't think we will meet the Millennium Development Goals. Thank you for listening.
So
Thank you very much, Chris, for your thought-provoking presentations, showing solidly our work, but at the same time raising important issues and underlying the importance of our financial monitoring scheme, so we really know where we are hitting with our activities the epidemiologic important aspects of the disease. In the interest of time, I allow for three questions or issues. Mark, please give your name and affiliation. There, behind you.
Hi, Chris. Thanks. I'm always very impressed by the crisp way that you put all the global data together. I have two questions. One is, how reliable are the country data that you use? And have they ever, is there a coherent way to consider auditing country data? What would a business do if it was, if it wanted to hire you and we were run by, you know, capitalist NGO, a capitalist world system that, you know, wanted the very best data? How would you go about auditing that? And then the second thing is, by my calculations, and I'm not as good at math as you are, if we're detecting about 60% of smear positive TB, that which is about 50% of TB, then we're really detecting 30%. And then if we're treating or curing 84% of those, that 30%, that's 3 times 8.4, which is 25%. So after 11 years, we're curing 25% of TB. Is that right? And if so, what is happening to the other 75% of TB cases?
Yeah, thanks for that.
That are three questions, Chris.
On your first question about the quality of data, of course, there are many things that we try to monitor and evaluate, and there are many different kinds of data that we collect beyond what I've described in the presentation this morning. And of course, those data are of very variable quality. There are various ways to audit the information. We carry out the best possible audit that we can from Geneva, which is an intensive series of discussions through our regional office and with the countries themselves on the reliability of the simple reliability of the information that's being transmitted to us. We also carry out investigations in countries, which are investigations of the data that countries collect themselves, the routine surveillance data, plus additional surveys, as you know, to check and cross-validate the data that are collected routinely. So disease prevalence surveys, for example, are keenly encouraged where they can be carried out, but they are also costly and logistically difficult. But what's important with respect to your question is the cross-validation between these different sources of information. There's a lot more detail, but I think I don't have time to give it you here. On your second question, this is not a question of mathematics. This is really a question of what happens to smear negative cases. We only emphasize in our statistics the smear positive cases for the reasons you're well aware of. They're the ones that can most easily be diagnosed. They're the ones that are most responsible for transmission and the ones that suffer the most severe kinds of TB. It's not to say that smear negative patients don't get diagnosed and treated, but unfortunately we don't have good data on how many smear negative patients get diagnosed and get treated, but certainly a large number of them do get diagnosed and treated. So it's not presented in our statistics, but if you went through the logic of the calculation you just presented, you would get a grossly misleading answer, a serious underestimate of the number of people who get cured.
One more question. Okay, while I announce the next speaker, may I ask of you standing in the back, there are still some seats here, and you can come forward and find a seat. Thank you very much, Chris. Yesterday, the members of the core groups of the implementation working groups and other experts met and discussed for a whole day on the way forward in implementing the new Stop TB strategy. And it was meant that Jeremiah Chakaya from Kenya, as chairman of the DOTS Expansion Working Group, would present, but unfortunately there were problems with his flight from Kenya to here, so he will be here later. But we are lucky that Rosalind Viazon will present the outcome of yesterday's discussion. Rosalind.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Brookman. And in behalf of Jeremiah Chakaya, who, as mentioned earlier, could not make it today, I'll be presenting to you what the outputs of the country situations yesterday were in terms of laying down to you the achievements we've had globally and in terms also of what will be the future challenges for all of us as country managers of NTP. Okay, so this is the picture of how TB right now is in the global scenario, and as mentioned by the earlier speaker, there is this epidemiological picture that 1.6 million of deaths have occurred in 2005, mostly occurring in the developing world, and in terms of deaths due to TB HIV, you can see these large figures of 219,000. In terms of new cases being detected in 2005, almost 80% of those 8.9 million are still occurring in the 22 high-burden countries, notwithstanding the fact that MTR-TB, being present in 102 of 109 countries, are now being seen globally, plus, of course, the emergence of what is more threatening, the XTR, or the more lethal type of MDR-TB. Based on this, it was also found out that in 2005, indeed, there was World Health Assembly, there was really the statements made that countries would need to detect 70% of infectious TB cases and to treat at least 85% of this. This has been also backed up further when the Millennium Development Goals have been started out, in which we'd like to halt or have the prevalence and deaths of TB as indicated in indicators number 23 and 24. And of course, quite recently, with the launching of the Stop TB partnership, that 50% reduction of TB prevalence and death rates need to be achieved, hopefully, by 2015. Okay, so this is a slide that has been shown yesterday, that as far as these two important indicators, namely cure rate and case detection rate, in a period of 10 years, you can see that there is really an increase in the green bars representing the case detection, although, as mentioned earlier by Chris Dye, there was a near miss because we really haven't reached that 70% and we're just averaging at 59%. However, in terms of cure rate, we have seen that we have fairly made it stable, achieving the targets of 85%, although there is still that near miss here because we have only reached 84% sometime in 2005. Aside from those pictures of case detection rate and cure rate, there is this global scenario why we need to really address TB in a more determined and more committed way, because we have seen the emergence of HIV prevalence in these countries. Likewise, we have seen also the emergence of MDR-TB, in which in these new cases from 1994 and 2003, we can see that areas are already suffering from such dreaded forms of TB. What is quite important here is the fact that we have very little data to show how we can address these two important aspects of MDR-TB and TB-HIV. And in the recent journal entitled The Lancet, the new Stop TB strategy and the global plan has really been endorsed for countries to adapt its strategies so that we can address further our control for TB in the light of those two global scenarios, as well as in the light of MDR-TB and TB-HIV. The content of that Stop TB strategy document really addresses each of these strategies that are listed here, with preference still for pursuing high-quality DOTS expansion and enhancement, addressing TB-HIV, MDR-TB, and other challenges, contributing to health system strengthening, engaging all care providers, which now sees that there is a shift from merely service provider to increasing access and coverage, and that is the engagement even of patients, Empower people with TB and communities is also another aspect of how we can engage other stakeholders in our area. And of course, promotions of operational researches is still mentioned in that document. So these are the two documents that have been laid down. The Stop TB strategy was launched last year, whereas the global plan to stop TB has been launched during the World TB Day this year. So the objectives of the meeting yesterday, I think some of the my fellow colleagues here, were one, to review progress in scaling up TB control according to Stop TB strategy and the global plan to stop TB for the years 2006 to 2015. Discuss major challenges and potential solutions in scaling up TB control according to these two key documents to determine how us working groups can work together better to support country planning and implementation of the Stop TB strategy. Okay, my flow of presentation will be first I'll discuss to you what the achievements were as far as these two documents were in terms of the country, and this is more or less the generalities that we have seen yesterday. 84% of treatment success rate, as mentioned, has already been achieved, with a case detection rate specifically at 59%. There have been development of country strategic plans, at least a five-year country strategic plan in most of the countries that were present yesterday, and there's an increase in DOTS coverage and DOTS infrastructure. However, laboratory strengthening initiatives, particularly with the introduction and expansion of the external QA system, is now on place in most of the countries, and strengthening in terms of other management operations such as planning, M&E, and supervision has also been mentioned by most of countries. What is also important is the fact that there has been observance of increase in financial resources, particularly coming those from the Global Fund. Okay, on the aspect of TB-HIV, what has been achieved by most of the countries is the fact that we have already seen policies for collaborative TB-HIV interventions, and the initial start-up or initial implementation is already occurring. TB-HIV training materials have been developed, and there has been already the initial rollout of this training in some of the countries. M&E systems for TB-HIV as well has already been developed. In the field of MDR-TB, political commitment for MDR-TB management at country level has also been great in terms also of experiencing mobilization of resources and in terms of increasing funding for second-line drugs, largely through the support of Global Fund. There has also been scale-up of MDR-TB treatment in many countries. To be specific, 40 countries under the GLC-approved project has already been showing scaling up of their MDR-TB activities, and in which more than 23,000 patients have been put already into treatment. Similarly, in terms of human resources for MDR-TB, there has been the development of guidelines and training modules, as well as the actual training of NTP managers and even consultants. So PPM, public-private mix, is still one of the achievements made by most of countries, and there has been development of guidelines that has been seen globally. Scaling up of successful pilots contributing to increased case detection is seen in most of the countries, including, of course, Philippines. Training of NTPs, private sector, and consultants has also been achieved in most of those undertaking PPM initiatives. For ACSM, we have started to engage cured patients, now as advocates, those affected communities, and the civil society in our control to fight TB. There is also the proof that the use of the media, the tri-media, the radio, TV, and print, has been made or mobilized to increase TB awareness. And of course, the Global Fund, under the Global Fund, there have been successful grants which contains ACSM components. So perhaps with all those achievements and with the picture of TB globally, what were some of the key overarching challenges that has been posed to us countries? One is there is a need to align the national plans that we have developed in accordance with the Global Plan to Stop TB 26 to 2015, which means to say that in terms of strategies and in terms of priorities, there's need to revisit perhaps our plans to make it synchronized or in line with the Global Plan Stop TB. Of course, the issue of sustainability has always been a prevailing concern, in which case we need to ensure that sustainability comes in the form of core government supports, that in case of donor-dependent NTPs, sustainability is still present, and in terms of donor contributions, for those who have been phasing out or have been quite unstable, we need to ensure that there is still presence of sustainability. Political commitment with sustained and or increased resources to reach MDGs should be made, but of course we're looking that we can reach it even beyond, and we can achieve this if we try to raise and maintain political commitment in large federal systems. This has been an issue in some of the countries having a federal system such as China and Russia. Building the advocacy should be seen not only at the global level, but should traverse also in national and even subnational levels to say that there is really strong advocacy for political commitment. Another key overarching challenge is on health system strengthening, in which we'd like to look into how we can improve quality, coverage or access, infrastructure on HSS, and of course measurements and indicators, because we'd like to see how HSS can contribute to NTP and vice versa, how NTP can also improve HSS. In terms of human resources, we'd like to see that later on there will be more planned management of our human resources engaged in NTP, planning, quality, quantity, distribution, recruitment, and even retention of staff is seen as an overarching challenge for most of the countries having NTP, successful NTPs. Side by side with human resources is, of course, laboratory infrastructure, which also looks into aspects of staffing and building the capacity of our laboratory services. And, of course, addressing special populations, the introduction and scale-up of MDR-TB, TB-HIV activities, and those populations which are considered special populations, in order for them to be reached, all of these pose highly complex challenges for us NTPs. So, in terms of data, as mentioned earlier by the first speaker, we need to see that the quality of our data be put into place. Quality management of data and even measurements of staff TB component have to be measured. And then maintaining and or improving quality of dots in general is always an overarching challenge for all countries. Balancing competing priorities, which means that we need to compete, balance our competition with other programs and in fact within TB control activities, such as particularly in terms of funding for some components versus that of the regular or the basic simple dots. New strategies and multiple partnerships require better coordination. In here, it is seen that multiple partnerships would need to be more coordinated, not only those internal partnerships or internal coordination, but equally important is the external coordination with the global partners. And we put here some overarching challenges, which we labeled as others, to be more specific in their concern, and that is one, extending diagnosis to smear negative and extrapulmonary TB cases, especially those with high HIV settings, and of course, addressing childhood TB populations. Biosafety and infection control has been a concern of most countries, and indeed, this is really one aspect that we have to look into in our future challenges. Excuse me. Under developed guidance on component 5, particularly which speaks of the ACSN, still needs to be more documented, and in here, although we have the guidance, we need to implement it more in the context of how our country owns scenario. Lack of clarity around definitions of community has been an issue yesterday, because there has been a need to really come up with uniform definitions or terminologies of really what a community for TB is all about. And then the need for technical assistance has been considered as a surfacing issue, but needs to be addressed in such a way that it should be cutting across all these different aspects of TB initiatives. One is that there's a need still for continued presence or continued providence of technical assurance and ongoing support to most countries, and we need to link that technical assistance with human resource development to ensure that there is sustainability. Translating guidelines into programmatic activities was also seen as a challenge for most of us, because these guidelines have to be put into action. So perhaps the question that is posed on us is, how can the working groups and partners ensure adequate coordinated response? And in order for us to respond to these questions, let me cite to you the four guiding principles that we have to keep in mind. One is, the highest priority is still basic dots, and of course, quality of dots is still the highest priority that we need to address in terms of where dots has been scaled up very fast. In countries where health systems, human resource, and labs are very weak, in terms where HIV epidemic and MDR-TB problems are at most severe. The second principle is the fact that governments and partners with the least capacity need the most help to adopt the strategy in full. So we have here some degree of prioritization in terms of how we can fully maximize or fully adopt those strategies in the global plan. Third, we need to work in a new way, meaning to say that if initially we're looking into pilot tests, then assessment, and then sharing of results, this has to be made side by side with another process of preparing and initiating scale up. So this is a new trend that we'd like to see later on as we come up with implementation of these strategies. And finally, we still have to document or need to continue to document results to come up with more solid facts and to come up with more concrete evidences. So that is the slide, last slide I'd like to share with you, and in behalf again of the NTP managers, of course, Dr. Jeremiah Chakaya, let me thank all of you.
Thank you very much, Rosalind, for a lively feedback on yesterday's discussion. Are there any questions of clarification or any issues for discussion?
It's working. Can you hear me? Yeah, I have a remark and a question. The remark is that next year we would like to hear from the executive of the STOP-TB, or the director actually, Dr. Mario, as well as the executive director of the union, that it's not that we would like to hear or we would like to see that TB is a political issue, but we would like to hear it more strongly that TB is a political problem. And my question is that ensuring sustainability and government support to programs is not a prerequisite. I mean, it's not a condition or one of the eligibility criteria for funding from the Global Fund. And I am afraid that we will be giving different messages. And I think it's very important that the STOP-TB and the Global Fund give one message that funding by the country itself themselves is an important issue and should be one of the criteria for eligibility for countries, for law-setting countries.
I think a very important, more general remark. Rosalind, would you like to?
I think the first question is addressed to the executive director, though. In terms of the sustainability, I think government support should always be seen as part of any overarching challenge, because no matter what we do, this government support will always have to be present for us to be able to sustain our activities. It's still a country-owned program, meaning to say it's owned by the country, and therefore government support should be the one really on the step forward in terms of providing support for such activities. The external support, particularly coming from the Global Fund, is more of an assistance or a hand arm that we need to look into a potential access that we need to achieve, because we've seen that there is still lack of support coming from government. But what is important is there is always that counterpart share that government should always express in terms of battling or fighting the TB disease, because the program is really a country-owned activity. So I think we have to really express some forms of sustainability in such a way that government should really be on the front line in terms of putting on some resources to this.
Yeah, if I may add to that, I think TB is a country problem, and that country ownership of that problem also means that there should be country-driven will to find a solution and to address that problem, and that whatever we do at a global scale in sense of creating a global fund or bilateral aid, et cetera, can only be a temporary measure. I think that's the history of TB control in the industrialized world, and that is the should be the aim for TB control globally, that countries solve their own problem, and that the political commitment is necessary given the size of the problem. Any other intervention?
Martin? Thank you. Yep. Thank you very much for the presentation. I have just one question. I tried to cope with all the key challenges, and it was quite a number. I didn't count them, maybe 30 or so. A couple of slides. If now the NTP managers go back home, is there a kind of common sense? What are now really the key activities what countries should do to reach those targets? Because this list of long, it's quite long. It's every, as if every group has have its own key challenges. Is there something comprehensive in it?
The challenges posted were actually generalities from the situations made by countries yesterday. So I think that not necessarily all these challenges had been adopted by countries, but we need to prioritize what are the key important overarching challenges that are currently applicable and currently that countries, country managers need to address, need to prioritize to really undertake and come on with implementing this global plan stop TB or strategy. Say for instance, in special populations, countries having no high burden for MDRs or TB-HIV perhaps need to less prioritize this compared to if they find it, if they find their country situations weak in laboratory. So these are more of a short list that we post for countries, but we still have to prioritize what will be the more important and the more applicable challenges that countries should do. And in that sense, I suggest that, or perhaps other country coordinators will agree with me, that we need still to scan our environment, scan our NTPs, try to come up with some analysis or situationers so that we'd be able to really see what needs to be applied immediately and currently so that we can address these problems of TB that we have cited earlier.
Another question. We are ahead of schedule, so there is time. Okay, we move to, I think, what was one of the most in the press exciting news towards the subject of extensively drug-resistant tuberculosis. And it's really a pleasure to introduce Ken Castro, who will give us the background and the current state of affairs.
Thank you. Good morning to all of you. Think of me as a rapporteur today. I will be reporting on the outcome of the first global XDR-TB task force convened by WHO in Geneva. And I will acknowledge that being very liberal in the use of slides prepared previously by Paul Nunn, Diana Weil, and many of the rapporteurs during that particular meeting. As you will see, the whole presentation you just heard, we're walking away thinking there's a lot to do. Well, I have news for you. There's a lot more to be done and more urgent than ever. So if you felt complacent, stand still. This is the way the story begins. On World TB Day of this year, the Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report published the outcome of a collaborative study conducted by WHO, CDC, and the Network of Supranational Reference Laboratories, looking at samples that get submitted to them for drug susceptibility testing. For purposes of that publication, extensively resistant tuberculosis was defined as cases in persons with tuberculosis whose isolates were resistant to isoniazid and rifampin, therefore they had MDR-TB, plus they were resistant to at least three of the six main classes of second-line drugs. Keep using the wrong button. This particular survey was prompted by anecdotal descriptions in the various DOTS Plus projects of virtually untreatable TB patients fairly astute clinicians saying, I don't know, but I'm seeing something really strange when we're working with these patients. And also seeing and obtaining results showing that many of the M. tuberculosis isolates had resistance well beyond the usual MDR. Here are the six classes of second-line drugs that we rely upon based on guidelines for the programmatic management of drug-resistant tuberculosis. And the rationale for that definition was because WHO recommends that you rely on first-line drugs plus one of either aminoglycosides or polypeptides, afluoroquinolone, and as many of these other drugs as you need to try to improve the outcome in persons with extensively resistant tuberculosis. That survey represents a convenient sample of over 17,690 isolates submitted to the Supranational Reference Lab Network between 2000 and 2004. And the main findings are here. 20% of these isolates had multidrug-resistant tuberculosis, and 2% of the total had extensively resistant tuberculosis. Furthermore, XDR was present in all regions of the world, although more commonly seen in former Soviet Union or Eastern European countries, and Asia, especially in the Republic of Korea, where they were more systematically doing drug susceptibility testing. Before you point out this limitation, it is well known. We do not know how common it is. We just know that it exists, and it exists in different parts of the world. Here is an effort to try to show by region where it was more common, 14% in Eastern Europe, 15% in Republic of Korea, industrialized nations about 6% XDR, and so forth. Fairly infrequent, not surprisingly, because the selective pressure has been relatively absent up until fairly recently. Now we move to the next story by some intrepid researchers and investigators in KwaZulu-Natal. And in fact, I understand from Jerry Friedland that this is slated to be in press in Lancet anytime soon. What they observed was that as part of their TB antiretroviral treatment integration study, out of 119 patients, 14 had died. Lo and behold, 10 or 71% had multidrug resistant TB, and six of those 10, when tested against the other drugs, were found to be resistant to all of them. And these were the drugs they tested for in that particular setting. And while at that time, these strains didn't quite meet the case definition, it was suggestive of probable extensive drug resistance in this hospital, and it prompted a survey of all TB suspects between January of 2005 and March of 2006, and I will share with you some of those results. These are from slides that Tony Moll presented, by the way, at the South Africa MRC expert consultation on September 8th. Out of 1,539 isolates, 35% were culture positive, 41% had MDR, and 53 of them, or 10% of that total, approximately, had XDR-TB, 24% of persons with multidrug-resistant tuberculosis. When you look at patient characteristics, 26 of those 53 had not been treated previously for tuberculosis. I think that's a very important finding because it is circumstantial evidence of primary acquisition of extensively resistant tuberculosis rather than acquired TB. Only 44 were tested for HIV. All were positive. I understand from talking with Tony Moll, Neil Gandhi, Jerry, and others there that they suspect all 53 were HIV infected based on their clinical presentation. And look at this. This is unacceptable. 52 or 98% were dead within a median of 25 days since the diagnosis. And based on some studies that have been conducted by Professor Wilmsturm there, 26 had identical spoligotypes of 30 that were available for testing. Those of you from the Americas, the United States, and Canada, are going to remember what Yogi Berra was famous for. This is deja vu all over again. We saw that in New York, very high mortality, and back then was with strain W. These findings, which were presented more recently at the International AIDS Conference, prompted an emergency consultation convened by a South African Medical Research Council. I'm just giving you the outcome of that particular meeting, where after reviewing the data, there was a global seven-point plan of action which emphasizes the basics of proper TB control. From the beginning, it is well known that to stop the manufacture of drug-resistant tuberculosis, you really need to make sure that the right drugs are used, that adherence is paid attention to, etc. Having said that, we do need to conduct rapid surveys to determine the burden. If you were to ask me how common, where is this happening, we wouldn't know, and we need to know. The other thing is, the next question is, well, how are we going to find out? Well, what labs are there available? And it really highlights a deficiency that has existed and prevailed out there. But I think for too long we've been too complacent about. We need to improve rapid drug susceptibility testing capacity and bring that closer to the patient. We need to improve the capacity of clinical and public health practitioners to effectively respond to these outbreaks and to manage patients with whatever is left and available. Rapidly implement infection control precautions with a focus on settings where highly susceptible populations, especially persons living with HIV/AIDS, congregate. Increase research support for anti-TB drug development. What are the new drugs that we're going to be using? And support for rapid diagnostic tests. And be careful that these calls for action do not undermine the globally agreed upon a plan to provide universal access to ARIVs, especially in settings where we're running these joint programs. That was promptly followed by the meeting that I'm reporting on right now. That meeting was convened in Geneva to define key issues, make recommendations, identify urgent action steps required in the very near future, covered six broad areas: management of XDR suspects in high and low HIV settings, programmatic management of XDR treatment and treatment design, improving the lab definition, infection control and protection of healthcare workers with emphasis in high HIV settings, as I've stated previously, immediate call for surveillance activities, and, of course, advocacy, communication, social mobilization strategies, and develop plans for appropriate global response and within countries, including designation of roles and responsibilities. This is the revised case definition. It was published about a week or so ago in the WHO weekly report, and it will appear in the Morbidity and Mortality weekly report this week on November 3rd. The goals were to really enhance public health surveillance, have a simpler case definition, use reliable drug susceptibility testing methodology. When we were sitting with the lab professionals and experts, they were saying, I don't know, how could you have used cycloserine, ethionamide, PAS, because we don't trust those results. They're not reliable. However, they are reliable for the fluoroquinolones, for the aminoglycosides, and capreomycin. So that new definition is MDR plus resistance to fluoroquinolones and one of the second-line injectable drugs. In terms of clinical relevance, we saw some very interesting data presented by Virenet Lemang from Latvia, where they've had a DOTS Plus project for several years, and I have selected some of the data that she presented in that particular setting. Take a look at the original case definition. In Latvia, where the conditions, I would say, are fairly optimal for the outcome of persons with MDR-TB, about 55, approximating 60% cure, and 30% failure. If you look at persons who meet the revised case definition, you reverse that. The cure rate goes down, and the failure rate goes up. So this is, not only are you using a simpler definition with reliable drug susceptibility test results for second-line drugs, but it also conveys a worse outcome, at least based on these data, and I understand that other countries are collecting similar data to see if this will be validated in other settings. So the needs identified at that meeting were, of course, for coordination and collaboration, so we'll mention content, partnerships, countries, the resource mobilization, and some of the crude costs. As far as content for the collaboration, there was a call for dissemination of the revised definition, and as I've just stated, that has been accomplished. Lab diagnostic strengthening. I understand there will be a meeting following the union conference Monday and Tuesday at the Pasteur Institute by the working group looking at laboratory capacity, and I understand that this is going to be very much at the heart of those discussions. Management principles for suspected individuals with these forms of extensively resistant tuberculosis. What are going to be the program management of these persons within the basic TB program and health systems? Infection control aimed at protecting the healthcare worker and other patients. So what are the surveillance principles? How are we going to be monitoring these trends and the protocols to be implemented? Related operational research and other research and development, as well as the ever-present important advocacy and communications. Then with the help of Diana Weil and others present there, we started mapping what kind of assistance is now present that we don't need to wait for the watershed event of many new resources. Well, right now, WHO is working with Latvia on training for countries and consultants. CCN and the union have similar programs. Then there's the HIV treat, train, and retain partners. There is a possibility, and we ought to demand pretty much that the Global Fund for AIDS, TB, and Malaria consider reprogramming dollars to address this urgent reality and include that in round 7 applications. WHO and other partners were identified as the groups that could assume responsibility for that. As you know, the United States is part of the President's emergency response for AIDS, and those countries had just submitted their country operational plans. So we're trying to leverage and influence those plans to include the ability to do some of these rapid surveys within those existing resources that are there. There's a USAID-funded TB CAP housed out of KNCV. Of course, the Green Light Committee is going to be crucial to make sure, again, that as we make the second-line drugs that are needed available, we don't immediately lose them because we throw them in a setting that is producing resistance. The surveillance and supranational reference lab link, pre-qualification of manufacturers of these second-line drugs through essential, drugs and medicines. Also, the need to include in all 7 working groups and subgroups the discussion about this and potential for other donor engagement was also mapped out there. In terms of coordination with and between countries, there's a need for a country-by-country response to requests for technical assistance in all heavily affected countries. And at least initially, we're seeing this happening in South Africa and neighboring countries, and many of them are already coming to WHO requesting assistance to implement these surveys. There was a meeting with the Department of Health, and in fact, about a week after this task force meeting, the Ministry of Health or Department of Health in South Africa held a meeting where they brought together the 14 SADC countries to develop country plans and address these very same issues. And of course, we would be fools if we try to reinvent the wheel. Let's work with those who've been at this for quite a while and who've developed quite a bit of expertise. And countries that have demonstrated that are Estonia, Latvia, Peru, Philippines, Here's a potential matrix that was advanced at that meeting where you identify the country, the key technical partner, the current status on the various areas, the key activities required, responsible organizations, budget, and what is going to be the source of those resources. Again, this was proposed while we were there. In the area of research and development, there's a crying need to accelerate the evaluation of new diagnostics. And in fact, today, the working group on new TB drugs is meeting elsewhere and not here. I would have been there had I not had this presentation. The importance of access to available rifampin, rapid rifampicin tests. So you're going to ask me, well, what are we going to do about this? Do we have to wait several years? Let me share with you some very interesting and important data shared by Rick O'Brien while we were there from FIND. Here are two available tests that are being evaluated, the genotype MTBDR, InnoLIPA-RIF-TB, by Inogenix and Hein Life Science. Both detect M tuberculosis as well as rifampin resistance. One of the two of them detects also INH resistance based on CATG mutations. They're PCR-based, so you can get results within the same day. So the question then that we're faced with is, how are we going to accelerate the evaluation of these tests where on that same day, if you found that you had a person with rifampin resistance, you can be assured that person has either multi-drug resistant TB or is one step away from it. Most people will not have it. And what we're seeing with some of the early evaluations is that these tests appear to have a good negative predictive value, so that those with negative tests, you put them through the DOTS program, ensure their proper treatment, and then rapidly identify those who have resistant tuberculosis by doing the second-line tests that are required and not have the patients die while waiting for test results. In terms of clinical development pipeline, we've learned from the Global Alliance that there are several compounds being evaluated, and those shown in blue and phase one or early bactericidal activity produced by Johnson & Johnson, Otsuka, Lupin, et cetera, in vitro have already shown activity against these particular strains. Are we to sit here and wait for the usual 20 years to get these drugs evaluated for efficacy and out there? And that is one of the challenges that we're going to need to face. So the best laid out plans are being overtaken by the more recent events that we've seen. Lab capacity building, I cannot say, but I've been heard, and I will repeat myself, asking, can someone give me a good reason why all TB suspects should not have access to drug susceptibility testing? I want a good reason to stop me from what we think we ought to do. There's an urgent need for enlarged budgeted plan for lab capacity buildings, hardware, software, all the components, of course, treatment of the necessary personnel, and a strong public statement on the need for this strengthening. It is a shame that we are here convening in Paris in 2006 and still relying predominantly on the AFP smear as the basis for diagnosis of tuberculosis. It is a great test, but shame on us. I have a BlackBerry. I'm connected with Atlanta right here, right now. What's wrong with this picture? Why is the discrepancy there? Next steps, WHO and partners are to further develop the costed plans. We're going to really need to strategize. We heard from Mark Harrington yesterday at the Global Alliance stakeholders meeting how we really are going to need to come together and put the pieces of the puzzle together, update the global plan, incorporate and fine-tune it to acknowledge all these new needs. And there's going to need to be global coordination with the various partners. Stop TB partnership, I think it's going to be key at the heart of this. And I think I'm going to finish here. with acknowledgments, because I have relied very heavily on the data presented by Tony Moll at that meeting. Members of ZADC countries who've been at all these meetings and consultations, those who participated in the first global XDR task force, and here's the webpage where you can go get some additional information. Karen Veyer from South Africa Medical Research Council, the STOP-TB department, and folks in our own division for putting together all these early meetings. Of course, these supranational reference lab networks, the Treatment Action Group FIND, and the Global Alliance for TB Drugs. I'm going to stop here, make a plug, take a look at page 11 of the program. On the 2nd of November at 12:30, there's a much more comprehensive presentation. I've truncated that and given you the terse version, but you're to hear a lot more from many others who are working on this. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, Ken. Mario Ravigona likes to compare our TB global TB control effort with running a marathon. But here you see that sometimes the world is forced in a 100-meter short track and within 10 seconds, if possible. And Ken, you have done this. Thank you very much for that. But now we have, again, to fit the two together, the overall strategy and resolving the dreadful issues that were confronted in KwaZulu-Natal. I'm sure there are many questions. Rosanne.
Thank you very much.
Hello. Thank you very much. I think we have many people in this meeting and many strategies. We need some time to prepare laboratory and whatsoever. My question is that how can we do for the today? For example, next week you are going back to your home country. What can we do? I would say that from the TB HIV point of view, we have a lot of concern for the ARV clinic. For example, in Thailand, where hundreds of people living with HIV come to the clinic to receive the antiretrovirus therapy. What should we recommend them today? What should the ARV clinic do today in order to prevent the transmission of TB in ARV clinic, as well as the VCT, because we refer several places still HIV testing cannot be done in the TB service, and they refer the infectious case to the VCT clinic, which means we export TB to the VCT clinic. So I have the feeling that we can have some suggestion for all of us who are in this meeting to go back to your country and do it today. I mean, I have some feeling that expert can have some recommendation. Thank you very much,
and I very much appreciate your question. One thing you could do right away without one new penny or euro is to make sure that all these clinics are looking at the WHO published guidelines that recently came out for TB and HIV and prevention of TB transmission in those particular settings. You can start with administrative controls. Make sure that there is a rapid assessment of people who are coughing, sick with respiratory symptoms. Don't sit them in the same room where the others are if they are symptomatic. Other approaches would be ensure that the ventilation is appropriate. In many places where we work in the high burden countries, thank God the environment, they're found within the Tropic of Cancer and Capricorn. You can keep the windows open, allow for the cross ventilation. If a patient happens to be hospitalized in a room, close that room. You can actually even put an exhaust fan and create a negative pressure from the room in the room relative to the outside environment. And as a last resort, let's do what the people who are obsessed about the worry of SARS are doing. Let's remember cough etiquette. Let's cover our coughs. Let's use tissues. Let's use surgical masks when persons are symptomatic. That will reduce the amount of bacilli that are getting aerosolized when people are going through these forceful expiratory maneuvers, whether it's sneezing or coughing. So those are things that can be done without requiring hundreds or or of millions of dollars. In terms of your concern about the people who are not getting tested for HIV, I would be very concerned about that. We are living in a world that has embraced universal ARVs. Therefore, there is a good reason for getting people HIV tested because they will benefit from treatment. And in fact, in Brazil and South Africa, they've already shown that you can reduce the incidence of tuberculosis by having a robust HIV program. Of course, I would want to see a robust POTS program and not abandon that. And there's a tendency to have one or the other and not both. I don't think we should be satisfied with these as mutually exclusive options. I'll go back to the moderator.
Ken, thank you very much for a very constructive presentation. I think that the issue what we are discussing now, very topical not only among scientific circles, but also among the media. And many people have been reached by mass media during last time. And I would like to come back to your statement that we don't know the real situation with XDR-TB at the moment, and we need to assess. But we know the results from this very famous survey, WHO CDC survey. And it was, in some extent, a bad experience when the mass media published some wrong data. What I mean, I will explain, that we have the statistics, for instance, 14% for Eastern Europe, what you mentioned. This is statistics for XDR-TB among MDR-TB patients. And I think that we need to emphasize once more, and I would like that you reemphasize, that we are talking about the level of XDR-TB among MDR-TB patients. Sometimes we miss and we say that this is XDR-TB among all patients. This is wrong approach. That's why I think that we need to be careful with these statistics and to explain once more to mass media, to correspondents, what we are talking about, because this is very important. I would be happy if you confirm this. Thank you.
Well, no, I appreciate that, Richard. And I think this calls for a communication strategy with the mass media. I don't think that the fear of misinformation should paralyze us from doing what needs to be done. What we need to do is be proactive, get our messages out there, and work with the communications departments in national ministries of health, with WHO. They do have, and in fact, we've been working with Glenn on this, and I think they can really help us get the message out and get it correctly. I think that, well, let's face it, we live in a world that's obsessed with the possibility of pandemic flu, and we're spending money for a disease that has not yet occurred. That's an urgent threat, but the urgent reality, which is the tons of TB deaths that are happening on a daily basis, we're letting happen and not using resources for that. So given that frame of mind of this globe in which we live, I think we need to appeal to that fear. And I think it is a legitimate fear. I don't think we're committing perjury. These individuals are sick and dying in spite of access to antiretroviral drugs. What's wrong with that picture? You bring them in, you give them drugs to make them better, and you give them NDR and kill them in 25 days? That we really need to do better. And but I get back to being cautious, because our natural reaction is to clam up, not want to speak with the media, and therefore miss opportunities to get correct messages there. What we need to do is get proactive, get to work with media communications folks here at the union, at other places. I'm sure you have within your own midst at the regional office, and get them to work for you. They work, you know who they're working for? They're working for HIV, for malaria, and everyone else. Get them to work for TB now for a change.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons that TB doesn't get the resources it needs is that TB World doesn't ask for it. And I think what you said about the universal access to DST and culture is a really good example of that. And I'm going to be a little inflammatory and quote Melinda Gates at AIDS meeting. She said, if something is more important to you, she said, condoms save lives. She said, if something is more important to you than using condoms to save lives, then something is more important to you than saving lives. And I will say this to the TB world. If something is more important to you than saving the lives of people with MDR-TB, then you're more invested in the DOTS model, which has failed for MDR-TB, and now which is breeding XDR-TB, than you are in saving lives. And the DOTS model is based on this idea of transmission. And acid-fast bacilli detect the most infectious cases. And so we're still using a test that was developed by Robert Koch in 1882. Now, the reason why I am saying that many of you in this room really, really believe in DOTS and really don't believe in saving the lives with people with MDR-TB is because it's not in your global plan to treat 75% of the people that are going to get MDR-TB in the next 10 years. And it's not in the global plan to scale up the labs to even do a good job with acid-fast bacilli. And it's not in the plan to do infection control. And it's not in the plan to scale up to universal DST and universal culture. And it's not in the plan to put in enough money for research and development. And so even though you guys all work in TB and you all think you're trying to save lives, some of you are so addicted to the DOTS strategy, which is a public health strategy, and it's not a patient-centered strategy, and it condemns hundreds of thousands of people to death every year because of the public health strategy. And then when Ken Castro from the U.S., which is the biggest donor to TB, he calls for universal access to acid to drug susceptibility testing and culture, the room falls silent and not anybody has the guts to clap. And as an AIDS activist, I'm here to tell you that that is undetectable, unacceptable, and it's a failure of leadership at all levels. I want you all to become activists and radicals like Ken Castro and call for universal access to high-quality first-line and second-line treatment and cure for everybody that gets TB, adult and child, MDR and drug susceptible, TB HIV positive and TB HIV negative, and just I think universal access to TB to all of the interventions by 2010 is a non-negotiable demand, and you all need to go back and rewrite your global plan to get us to universal access by 2010. And to do anything less is to let down the millions of people that you claim to serve and that you're being paid to save their lives.
Thank you, Mark. In fact, while we were struggling with how do we really react to this properly, and I was chairing the session at the South Africa Medical Research Council meeting, I did make a bold statement. You're turning me into an activist, and you're becoming the diplomat. There's a role reversal, except for this moment. But yesterday, you should have seen him when he was wearing a tie. Say, you know, we need to read these plans and ask ourselves, if I were the patient with MDR, would I be satisfied with the way this plan reads? And that's really the attitude that we must adopt to force ourselves to do what's right for those who we claim to serve. Otherwise, we start getting complacent and we accept that it takes too long. But if you had MDR and you didn't have access to the drugs, if your daughter had it, you know, I would give anything in the world to save one of my daughters. So, you know, that's the attitude we really need to adopt in here and rid ourselves from the resignation that has prevailed for too damn long in our community. So I welcome your perspective. I expect you to be present in settings where decision makers need to be made uncomfortable. It's not this audience who needs to be made as uncomfortable as those who make the decisions about the budget that this audience is managing. I think we do have allies in this group that certainly need to reawaken the spirit of social mobilization.
Thank you, Ken, and thank you, Mark. I think I express the opinion of many of you when I say our commitment is the same, although we may have expressed it differently over the years and even in this room now. And with this kind of watershed exchange of views and the importance of the marathon vis-a-vis the 100 meter within 10 seconds, I propose to break for coffee and reconvene in half an hour, a quarter past 11.
Thank you.